shit.
Oh, shit indeed.
Shit indeed. Welcome to Desert Wheel Podcast, episode 001. I'm Greg.
I'm Richard.
And on today's podcast, from memory, no notes, we have a bit about our comic. What we're doing, we have reading, watching, playing. This week's topic is trading in games and the debate.
The mighty debate.
The debate. The debate. DLC. Good or bad?
Or shite.
Or shite. Better both, maybe.
Better both. We're fucking amazing, depending on how, you know, how you feel.
You could just wait to the debate and find out.
You could, aye.
Anyway, sit down, hope you enjoy, and yeah, let's go. Okay, if you haven't established this already, we are not professionals. I will stress this from the very beginning. What we are, though, is two Jake Boz who are trying to find their feet in the writing world, if you will.
Specifically comics.
Yeah, comic books at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, we basically used to... Well, two guys used to work in Edinburgh. Well, we still work in Edinburgh. We're not dead. But, I mean, we used to work together in Edinburgh. And we started reading comic books and decided, we could do that.
Easy.
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 Was that easy? Go and do it. Fine, we always said.
And then we sat down in a pub and about 4 months later we had our first idea.
Yeah, and that idea was to get pints.
Yeah,
lads. So we decided to, we thought we'd do it. It's one of those things where you see something, you look at it and think, I could probably do that. Or that sounds really, really big-headed. I could have a go at doing that.
Yeah, the worst thing you can do with anything in life is have a go. And, you know, well, I suppose the worst thing is you can think about it and not give it a go.
Well, unless it's something really bad, like mass murder, and didn't give that a go.
Well, yeah, I mean, I probably best not to give that a go, actually, because, you know, that could end pretty badly.
Well, end badly, wouldn't it?
Well, exactly.
I mean, so you could be shit at it.
You could be, which actually that'd probably be a good thing because you wouldn't even get your house in the first place. So there you go.
Every cloud and all that. So anyway, what we're doing at the moment is we actually have two comic books on the go at the moment. We have one called The Plight, which we started writing the first time. Took us so long to get the ideas off the ground with that one.
Because yeah,
we're writing these without really knowing how to write it. We're having to try and fumble about in the dark, if you like, and make it up as we go on.
It's like fishing in the dark in the middle of an ocean. With no fishing rod.
Yes.
And just a straw, hoping to catch a whale or something like that.
Yep.
So
it's exactly like that. As you can see, so I've been struggling.
Because our ideas are shite.
And then the second book we have, the second story that we have is the one called Levels, and it's essentially a survival horror, dark comedy.
Set in an office.
Yeah, set in an office, which is a world that we know very well, and that's why it's a horror.
Yeah.
But basically what we want to do, I don't know if anyone will actually want to heed this advice, but we decided that, seeing as we had nowhere to start, and no one to hold us by the hand and take us through, we'd basically give you how we done it.
It's
not necessarily a lesson, but it is a starting point if you want to be as successful as us.
Which success for us entails two comics that haven't been drawn yet and then recording a podcast telling people how to do things. If they want to do them our way, then that's fine. That's fine. But what Greg's saying, what I'm reinforcing is that we didn't have any help starting off, and we don't see any reason not to give any other people our help.
Yeah.
You know? So the way that we started out was essentially just the both of us sitting at work, just gabbering shite to each other and eventually putting it down into emails and emailing each other to say, finish off this sentence, right, you finish off this paragraph, right, you do the next paragraph for this. And it grew arms and legs, basically. And we eventually decided to just go and sit in a pub after work one day, took a couple of sets of post-it notes and just started going for ideas. We had a rough idea of what we wanted to do for our first one, and it was just a case of cultivating that and growing it and making sure we're happy with how it went as we go along. Mm-hmm. But in the first instance, it was kind of a struggle to sit there and come up with ideas.
Definitely. I mean, like, well, that's one advantage that we have. I always kind of figured, like, whenever you have an idea, you can think it's the best idea in the world, but writing as a partnership, if you like, you can say, I have this fantastic idea, listen to this, Or usually what would happen is I'd say, I've got an idea, and Richard says, that's been done, or that's about shit, or no, we can't,
this is shit.
No, we can't do that,
or maybe
we'll go to jail. Like, yeah. Stuff like
that. The one that was the one where I said we'll go to jail was more often than not with your ideas, to be honest. But
can I say, man, I'm wasted in here.
You are. You'd be a hit in jail. That's
yeah,
what you'd be.
Yeah, I'd be very popular.
You'd be very popular. Yes,
with my feminine physique. Anyway,
yeah.
If women are all fat. Anyway, so what we decided to do was put down as many ideas on post-it notes as we want. This is actually an idea that you came up with, because you know...
This was an idea that was... It was suggested to me by a friend of mine whose dad's a quite successful sci-fi author, and he told me that this is how his dad's started writing his stories. He would basically get four sets of post-it notes. One would be beginning... One colour would be beginning, another colour would be the next section of the story, another colour would be the third quarter, and then another colour would be the end. So you'd be setting yourself out a structure in the first place anyway. So we would just get as many ideas as we could. As Greg says, and just put them onto these post-it notes and decide where they would come in a story. Mm-hmm. So if we had a cool idea for the start, obviously it's the first coloured post-it note, and if we had a cool idea for the end, it's the last colour of post-it note.
But, it's like a big jigsaw puzzle.
Exactly, we were able to put these ideas down on paper and then just put them on the back burner for now while we tried to flesh the rest of the story out. So it's like cultivating a plant. It's like putting flesh on bones.
That's exactly it. When you say flesh on bones, though, that's another good thing, is the fact, again, we can only really give experience a partnership, because we've never, well, I've certainly never tried to, well, I have tried to write a comic book myself and it ended disastrously.
I have tried to write a book myself and good grief.
He actually wrote 50 Shades of Grey, which is quite impressive. But
I know, I'm very successful, but now I'm here.
But that's it, yeah, that's it. I give the high life up. But like I say, as a partnership, if you have an idea and you write it down for, say, the middle of the story, whatever, even if you think it's not the greatest idea, maybe a weak idea, want to make up the numbers, put it down, because that idea might then trigger a thought.
And absolutely.
Just like a partner's mind, that's not what I meant. Like, you're writing in partner's mind, if you like. No. Like, Rich, we got an idea, I'd look at it and be like, oh, we could maybe change that, and then I'd maybe change it, and then he'd then change it again, and it would just, it could be like such a basic idea that could evolve and evolve and evolve, and before you know it, you've then got a whole new angle of the story that you could explore.
Absolutely. And yeah, going back to the ideas, that no matter how bad that you think it is, it's a matter of not being afraid to suggest those ideas. It's a matter of being... You can say essentially anything you want if you think it will benefit your story. If you think it sounds silly, then your writing partner is either going to tell you yes, it is silly, or they're not going to tell you it's silly, and your story's going to suffer because of it. And we're quite lucky in the fact that if we've said to one another, oh, what about this, and what about that, and ha ha, this would be really good, one of us has turned around to the other one and said, oh, that's really good, but what about this?
Yeah.
Or if one of us said, that's no. or one of us has suggested an idea, and we've both just had a sort of eureka moment.
Yeah, it makes and great sense. Well done.
Absolutely. Pints in. Get them in. And I've got very drunk after that idea. You know, as a wee celebration.
For every good idea you have a pint. You become an alcoholic, but
once you get to hospital, you'll be fine. Yeah.
And then you go back and write some more.
That's the way that we wrote, and it's essentially how we still write now. We've not written with the post-it notes for a wee while, because we haven't had to come up with an idea for a new story for a while, but we're going to be going back to that one soon. But another thing that's helped us as well is it's not being afraid either to make big changes to your story when you've already written part of it. So say you've written A, B, C and D, and you come up with another idea that could replace C and add a little bit more spice to D.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you've already written it, don't be afraid to go back and change things, because you're only changing something for the better, and you as the author, you're writing it for yourself.
at the start, essentially.
And you want to put together the best thing possible. If you like something, the chances are someone else will like it. I mean, you can think of, like, someone came up with Batman, you know? You know, yeah. I read some of them sitting to themselves thinking, what could I do with a superhero? Oh, a guy based on Bats. The most successful, arguably, comic book franchise in history.
Well, that's it. I mean, if you came in at the pub and said, oh, I've got an idea, it's a man dressed up as a bat and goes about fighting crime.
I'd say, shut up.
Shut up. You're on speed.
Aye.
No, I'm not on Dawson Drugs.
I am.
Of course I am. But yeah, like I say, there's no point in any ideas. There's no such thing as a bad idea.
There isn't. And the people old.
But that's such an office-y phrase, eh? No idea's a bad idea. But it isn't though, and that's what's kind of.
It's true. There's no such thing as a bad idea. There's no such thing as a bad suggestion when it comes to writing your own comic, because it's your own comic.
Yeah.
You know.
However, in saying that, you say there's no idea's a bad idea, but you can kind of flog a dead horse in the sense that if we then explore an angle for the thing for like a story, and then we were like, what about that? And it wasn't kind of going anywhere. Don't be frightened just to give up on it. Change it, like Richard says. Just go back and say, nah, we'll change this. I mean, we had, on our second story, for example, we had an idea. We got the ending quite early on, decided we'd work backwards, which was quite productive. And then once we had pretty much got to about 80% through it, we then changed the ending.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was pretty nervous. I was like, oh no, I don't want to go back and rewrite it all. And then, but it made so much more sense.
Absolutely. And that brings us on to yet another thing that we've found has really helped us through this as well, is not being too precious about your ideas as a partnership. Because even if one of you has a great idea and you really, really like it, but the other one isn't so keen on it and can show you reasons why it might not work and how you could improve that idea anyway without having to get rid of it completely, then that's fine. Like, that's not one of us saying to the other, your idea is a pile of shite, we're not using it. it's more saying, right, cool, fair enough, but it might not fit in to the mold that we're going
that's
for,
your
so
opinion.
What we'll do
is, but
there
it's wrong.
There is such a thing as a wrong opinion. What do you have in this instance? So, but there's nothing wrong with that. You have to have compromise. You have to have a bit of give to each other, and make sure that you're both happy in the process, and you're both behind the ideas 100%. There's nothing wrong with challenging each other.
No, not at all.
There's nothing wrong with it.
But like that, and like you say, man, if you're going through the actual story, if you were to sit down and look through, if we were to go back through our scripts and look at it, we wouldn't be able to say, oh, that was my idea, that was your idea. That was your idea. It's just, it was an idea that got changed. However, if your story does become really, really successful, and there's a really good plot twist at the end, just claim responsibility.
Well, Spike Killer, guys, drink if you're out, and then go and release the comic yourself. And it should be fine. Everything should be fine. And don't blame us.
Yeah, don't blame us. So basically, yeah, ideas, get them, run with them. That's essentially it for week one's advice. Would you call it advice?
Guidance. Can we call it? We can call it whatever they want to call it. These beautiful listeners that are giving their time to listen to this horseshit.
Getting early. Yeah,
it's. This all applies, obviously, to singular writers as well. If you're writing on your own,
get a partner.
Get a partner. don't be afraid to look back things. If you are writing on your own, get someone else to check it. If you're not confident about your ideas, or even if you are totally confident about your ideas, if somebody comes back to you and says that bit doesn't make sense, it's never anything more than constructive criticism.
Don't be butthurt. Don't be like, no, how dare you say that?
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, there would have been instances at the start of us on our wee writing journey where we probably did get butthurt and say like, oh, but my idea was really, really good. He's gay. and
that's the kind of ideas I came up with.
Yeah. So that was actually dialogue for our... Like, yeah, just take everything with a pinch of salt. Be professional about it, and you'll be fine. You'll be okay.
Sign off for this, though. Was it Warren Ellis said? Like, never ever accept the fact that someone says your work's wrong because you're the writer. Sure.
Precisely.
So you can't be wrong.
Precisely.
And that got deep.
That little nugget of info is where we'll leave this section. Okay, so moving on to our first of a couple of sections. This one's going to be called Reading, Watching, Playing.
What's that about?
Well, I'm glad you asked.
Yes, well.
Basically, one of us is going to be playing something each podcast. One of us is going to be reading something each podcast. And or watching something each podcast.
And or. And, well, I like it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would work better if there was three people in the podcast, because then, you know, one of us, we could take turns on all three of them, but there's only two of us at the moment. Oh,
spoilers.
Yeah, kind of. But so this is going to be the next section, and we'll have a wee sift through the imaginary wheel just now to see what I'm going to go and get. So
spin it. The wheel. That's terrible.
Sorry, I thought you said play the trumpet.
Right? Oh, right, yeah.
Sorry, man. Sorry.
Spin the trumpet.
Spin the trumpet.
That sounds like a terrible euphemism, eh? Spin that trumpet, son. Right.
It does a
so
little bit.
So it has managed to land that terrible looking wheel. Has
we'll just
landed
say I'm doing playing.
Yes. Just... Richard is playing. So, Richard, what have you been playing this week?
Simply PS4. This if you're just listening to this podcast, this is being recorded on the 6th of January 2015. This isn't old. I'm just well behind the times. I've got myself a PS4. I scraped together enough cash at Christmas to go and buy myself one, and this kind of ties in well with the just after the anniversary of the 20th anniversary of the PlayStation.
Indeed,
I should
does,
say.
Yeah.
Just after.
That's what you were doing. You were waiting for the 20th anniversary to get one.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It seemed wrong before.
Yeah, I know. There was loads of PS4s that had, you know, the 20th anniversary version, but I didn't want one. You're
not hipster.
No, I'm not hipster enough.
I mean, come on, man, don't worry
about it. But basically, this is a move up for me from the PS3. And I couldn't be more impressed with a PS4 at the moment. It's a phenomenal piece of equipment. I love it.
No, I'm just gonna say you're treading on fanboy status here. Just watch yourself.
Well, I'm gonna get onto that in a little bit.
Oh, good,
anyway.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, it's in comparison to a PS3, the speed that it flicks through menus, the speed that it seems to take onto the internet, the speed to load games, all superior to PS3, obviously. The controller, there's a little sort of demo game, and I can't remember what it's called, but I watched it, and holding
Playroom.
Playroom, that's Aye. The one, yeah. And sitting just watching how to use the controller, you think to yourself, I don't know how to do this. It's a PlayStation controller.
Buttons. Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy. And then there's the wee speaker on the front of the controller, yeah. And it was just some little character going meow, 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 or something, and I went nuts. I was just kind of like, oh my fucking god, this is the cut. Yeah, from a little speaker. Oh my god, this is amazing. Next generation, we are here. Yes,
a one speaker. Yes, next gen.
One speaker.
I was playing Killzone on that. Like, I was up here and I was just sitting playing it, and I had my headphones on, but like,
recording in Greg's attic.
Sorry, aye. and then I had like my like lights off, and whatever. And then someone spoke to me through the speaker from the controller, and I shit myself.
But
I'm not lying. I had to put it off. I was like, no,
it's too bad. We're not ready. The world's not ready for this.
I'm not ready for this.
But I love it so far. I'm having an amazing experience, even just with the console itself.
So, what have you been playing? Sorry.
Well, I've only played a couple of games so far. I've started off playing Little Big Planet 3. I've never played a Little Big Planet game before, but I'm pleasantly surprised with it. I'm a big fan of platformers and little puzzly games and stuff like that, and I never thought that's what Little Big Planet was. I thought it was basically just a level simulator, a level builder, and you play your own levels. And I don't know why,
like
I've
Minecraft,
always
something like that.
Kind of like that, yeah. I think I played it once as a demo when the first one came out, and it was on that mode or something like that, and I just thought, fuck this, I'm not playing that.
I'm better than this.
I've not touched that, but it was one of the free games that, well, I say free, it was one of the games that came with my PS4, and I was really, really pleasantly surprised with it. It seems like you could probably get the same experience with that as you would on PS3, but the PS4 game that I've got, like the there's a little bit, it's not more exclusive, it's just a PS4 version of FIFA 15,
yeah,
which I'm loving at the moment. And for those of you that aren't interested in football, I won't go and bore you with it, but I had FIFA 15 for the PS3, and even that's a step up. Even that, there's every single mode for it is just improved. It looks better, plays better, and the online features, which I've never really been a fan of, and I'm really starting to get into online stuff now, and one of the other reasons that I decided I wanted a PS4 is that I am a little bit of a PlayStation fanboy. I am a little bit. I had the first PlayStation, PS2, PS3, and I've never been tempted to the shitey shores of Xbox.
Oh, I know. You can't say that.
I know.
I have. I've played Xbox. I have a 360.
Suffered because of it.
No, I didn't. I had a great time.
I don't. Anyway, that's what we're here to discuss.
I loved it like a child.
We're here to discuss PS4. So right, if you could just right, yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. Okay. I think one of the best things that is going to be happening for the PS4 is the exclusives that are coming out for it. And again, one of the things that I've loved so much about PlayStation in the past is the Uncharted series. And what with Uncharted 4 that's got voice acting by both Nolan North and Troy Baker in the same game. Well, the gaming universe is going to implode, isn't it? The two of them in the same game. I think that's I think that's amazing.
What the shit?
You can get out.
Get what, I want a house.
You don't deserve a house after saying that. I don't think it. I've seen the trailer game footage for it, and I think it looks like it looks. No. I'll be totally honest. It looks like the rest of the games, but they've just added more features. But
shinier.
Uncharted games are always fun. Always fun. If anything, I just hope it has a better story than Uncharted 3. I still think Uncharted 2 is the best out of the lot, but Uncharted 4 has the potential to be.
Mm.
So much better than everything.
And to try and win back those fanboys of Xbox, I played Uncharted 1 and didn't really like it. Anyway, we'll leave it there.
No, I'll come back to it later on. I'll come back to that. I'm going to end this my little section with a wee funny story about my brother who's just come onto the consoles, and he got a PS3 a couple of years ago, and he didn't play it because he was working an awful lot, and he works for a video games company that doesn't utilize. Or at the time it didn't utilise a lot of consoles, and so when he got a PS3 he was more involved in a PC gaming, so he just came onto PC.
So would that be a company that involves like things like snow, like a snowstorm,
one of those ones a specific type of storm starting with a B and ending with lizard, yeah. That one. Yeah,
nope, so, haven't got it.
No, nah, well I mean well, think over
sorry,
so basically he hadn't played it much, and he got him. He set it up when he got his new flat, and he didn't play it much. But then he got a PS4, and one of the things that he was most impressed about was the wireless controllers. And he was like, "Oh man, it's got wireless controllers. Oh my god, this is amazing." And I said, "That's not really anything new. You can get that with PS3." And he said, "No, you can't. I've got my ones have still got wires." So I went over to his little unit that I had on, and it was just like, "No, if you just undo." The USB thing. Look at his face. Rob, if you're listening to this, well, you deserve it. I'm only joking, but it was a funny look. Basically, yeah. we'll keep up with that. But PS4,
and
all
this boy works in the gaming industry, people.
Good. Sorry, Rob.
Right. Should I spin the wheel?
That's a bit of real noise.
That sounds like real life. What's it? Oh, it's reading. It's chances of that.
What are the chances? It's got that written on our little schedule thing as well.
It doesn't actually. It says watching because someone fucking put it down wrong.
Well, they don't know that.
Right. Yeah, so reading. I have not been reading. I actually read a couple of weeks ago, but quite enjoyed it. I thought it deserves a bit of a mention. It's a book called The Ghost Man. It's by a guy called... It's about a guy who's really friendly. His name's Casper. No, that's right. It's a film as well,
and a cartoon, so...
Oh, yeah, I could be watching it. Fair enough. Anyway, the author is a guy called Roger Hobbs, and apparently I read the other day that it's his debut novel, and he wrote it when he was, like, 22, which is kind of puts us to shame.
Dick.
To be honest, I really enjoy it. I'll tell you what it's about. The concept of the story is essentially a guy called the Ghost Man. You never find out what his real name is. He uses different aliases throughout the story. But he's essentially... if heists go wrong, like criminal activity goes wrong, or someone needs to disappear, or money needs to disappear, or something like a crime scene is cleaned up, they'll hire him. The mafia will come along and hire this guy. He'll go in and just basically sort shit out. Right, that's what it is. Sort shit out. That should have been the tagline on the bottom of the book. But essentially, it's about a robbery that takes place in a casino, and surprise, surprise, stuff goes wrong. It all goes to tits.
Wait a minute.
Aye. And they phone this guy, and he comes in and has to basically, one of the guys who's in the robbery disappears with all the money. This guy needs to try and find them.
Into thin air? No? Or?
Yes. Oh. And that's the spoiler.
Sorry, guys.
No, he doesn't.
Save my ass.
So yeah, this guy needs to come along and try and fix it. But to be honest, it's one of those books where it's kind of like his past catches up with him. And though the couple of things I will say is, I've heard a lot of reviews online, people on Amazon saying like, oh my god, it's just clearly been written by a guy and access to the internet, and he just Googled stuff and that. And I'm like, yeah, I'm cool with that.
What's wrong?
Like,
that's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. Like it's not Shakespeare. Of course it's not. It's called The Ghost Man. Calm down. Right? It's about like heist and stuff. But
and besides, who gives a shit?
Well, that's it.
Who still reads it? I'm sure a lot of people still read Shakespeare, but we've. It's like reading, writing has evolved.
Yeah, since, exactly.
Has evolved
exactly.
Since. So this guy's allowed to write how he writes.
It's a kind of throwaway novel, but it's a throwaway novel that kind of stuck with me. So I think it's done its job. The only thing I will say, there's a couple of like about it, is some of the characters are very stereotypical, like mafia. If you like, right. Like the bad guy's called like the Wolf. If you like, no wait, meh. There's no digging that.
All right.
But one thing is, it's very simple. It's very plainly written. It's very easy to follow. And also, there's this which I've quite liked because I've been reading another series called Odd Thomas. But we'll get to that.
Odd Thomas.
It's one of these stories who basically it doesn't just bombard you with jargon and expect you to know what it means. It kind of doesn't spoon feed you, but it holds you by the hand and says, by the way, I'm using this term. That term kind of means this.
Yeah.
Not like a dictionary, not like definitions of just like a list of like at the bottom. Kind of, it's got like a little asterisk, and you at the bottom, and it says this means this. It's just organic written and quite nicely written. And I liked it.
So it says in here that we've got it's a CWA thriller of the year 2013.
Well, apparently so. It's a CWA thriller of the year 2013. I don't know what that means.
But then it's still, I mean, if it's got a thriller of the year tag in it, that's a pretty good accolade to have for a book.
It's also Lee Child. Ken Big Lee Child.
Who's Lee Child? Sorry, Lee Child.
Never mind, that would have held so much more weight if you knew who he was. He says, read it immediately, which I didn't do because I bought it and put it on my shelf for a few months. Never read it.
So quite flagrantly disobeying.
I did
what he said.
Sorry, Lee.
Which is disappointing. Yeah, Lee, if you are listening, we can only pass on our deepest apologies.
Yes. The one thing I want to finish up with it. One thing I will say is apparently it was meant to come out this month, but apparently in June, I think. There's a follow-up book called The Vanishing Games, which I will be picking up.
So is that a direct sequel?
Well, I don't know. It's been quite sort of... He's released a title and that's about it.
It's still pretty vague.
Yeah.
With details.
I think it's one of those things where they go, yeah, it's in the book. Shit, I've got to write it though. Do you know what I mean? Like, it hasn't actually put much of thought. It might have. But it was meant to come out, like I say, this month, and it's been knocked back 6 months, so that doesn't bode too well.
So maybe he got like the advance for it and then just fucked around for 6 months and thought, shit, I've got a book to read.
He's just been high for like 8 months.
High on life.
So yeah, and I'll be picking that up. I mean, like I say, if you want, if you don't have to, check it out. If it's shit, let me know. If you really like it though, let me know as well, because I'd be like, yeah, that man on that radio podcast thing told me he did this,
and we'll take the credit for it.
Yeah, damn right we will. So that concludes reading, watching, playing. Until next time.
So we're moving on to our next wee topic here, which is going to be a podcastly topic that we're going to do. So it's going to range from games to comics to comic book films to TV shows, this, that, and the other thing.
And
it's going to be a topic not necessarily always about something specific comic book wise or film wise or something like that. Maybe something regarding how you play them or how you watch them or what you think of certain genres, this, that and the other thing. So we're going to start off a topic this week which is going to be all about trading in those beloved games that you have if you are or aren't a collector.
What does that mean?
Well, some people collect their games, some people don't. We have got two examples in this room of two different people who have them. So,
sorry, can I just give some background to this? I was in the pub with Richard and Tommy, who's no longer with us because he's...
Is at his house.
He's living in town.
Tommy Cree, our artist, look him up on Twitter, look him up on DeviantArt. Fantastic,
yeah.
To be honest.
Well, I was up with those two, and we basically... I got... I was going to say manhandled. That's not the word I was looking for.
Verbally manhandled.
Yes. Because I don't trade in video games to buy newer video games.
I do.
I know you do. You made that perfectly clear.
I did.
And I got called all sorts of names. And I basically wanted to bring it up on this. Well, yeah. Bring it up and sort of, not so much fake my ground, but get other people's opinions and see what happens. Because it's essentially like Richard's one extreme and I'm the correct extreme.
I wouldn't say we're extremes. I think there's points that we can both agree on, and there's points that we can quite flagrantly. I can't say
that's
it.
Still wrong.
I tried to say it and it was still wrong. That we both disagree on. That went well.
Yeah, good.
That we both disagree on. I'll stop peppering with big words that I can't say.
Yes, that's why I keep it all dumb.
Okay.
Let me put it to you, right? Okay, so what's your main... What would be your main reason for trading in a video game? Or a DVD, for that. You do that as well.
With DVD, well, DVDs, man. Okay, the main reasons that I have for trading in games, and this isn't necessarily all games. I have some pretty big emotional attachments to games that I've played, like the God of War series. I absolutely love the God of War series. I had like wee t-shirts and I bought like a Kratos doll thing that had loads of phrases and stuff like that. And I couldn't... your face says loser, but mine says winner. So...
I'm glad your face says that.
That was hard. Burn. Anyway, there was... So those sort of things I love about some games. But then you'll pick up a game every now and again and you'll get your way through it, or you'll get... a quarter, a half, you might even get 20 minutes through it and you'll just think to yourself, this is shite, why am I even keeping it? And so you can take that game to a shop of your choosing and get a wee bit of money off another game that you might enjoy, whilst someone else out there is going to get a cheaper version of a game that they might love. And it's not exactly the best reason to get rid of games, but it's how I look at it. I mean I can
see it, but I just can't do it. I can't go and spend like £40 on a game and then play through it, especially if I've enjoyed the game, and then take it back to the shop and the guy behind the counter goes, give you £3.50 for that. You're like, no, piss off. Like that's worth a lot more. Ken, what it is, you can't put a price on memories. I've got that written down.
And you were especially proud of it.
I was especially proud of that. Yeah. I think basically that's the kind of argument that I could just throw at you every single time.
I could say from a homely standpoint, you've only got so much space in your flat, and if your games occupy a wee shelf or a wee box or something like that, if there's shite in there, then why not get rid of it to make room for something that's potentially going to be better? Another reason why I'll trade in or sometimes occasionally upgrade a game is because of the way the online communities work. So I've taken FIFA, for example. If you really, really enjoyed FIFA 13 for the online capabilities of it there, the community's moved on to FIFA 14 and then it's moved on to 15. So what's the point in keeping FIFA?
That's the only example I can think of, because you put that in there. So you know, all the FIFA every year it comes out and I'm like, it does.
Say Call of Duties, like, and stuff like that as well though.
Yeah, Call of Duties and stuff like wrestling, and then games like NBA and all that sort of stuff. Like other games that come out yearly, but
communities move for games.
Yeah, they do, but not all games are online though. So other games, like for example, I make reference to it all the time, is Portal. Like, I love Portal and Portal 2. Like, I'd never get rid of that, ever.
Well, I haven't.
See, exactly. There you go.
But I've already... I've proven.
I'm done.
No, I've said as well that I've got... you get emotional attachments to games, and you get games that you just plain... just didn't want to get rid of because they were so good. Because you had so much fun playing them. You don't necessarily need to, you know, buy all the merchandise or anything like that that comes with them.
If a game's good,
then sometimes it deserves to be sort of kept as a trophy of your love for it. But then, like, on the flip side there, there was one game in particular that I kept as a trophy for a while, and I swore to myself I would never play again after completing it, because I found the end boss so frustratingly difficult that it took me like 3 days to beat it. And I got to the point that where my girlfriend moved up from England, on the day that her parents were bringing her up, I was still trying to beat the end bad guy when they were in like Kelso, and I should have been meeting them in town. And the Kelso's borders, the borders of Scotland, and Edinburgh's about maybe 2 hours away, so I really should have been going to the flat at that point. But I had Dead Space 2 sitting there, and I thought to myself for about a year, I'm keeping that. I completed that, and then I thought to myself, why am I keeping it?
Why not?
My PSN account tells me that I kept it. It tells me that I completed it. And my memories. Can you beat a price of a memory, can you?
That's it.
Right. I know I beat it, but I don't need to keep it. And I played Dead Space 3 in that.
It's not about... Do you know what, man? I've got loads of games in that cupboard for my Xbox, and I will never play them again. Ever. I'm kind of digging myself a hole here.
Keep on digging. Do you want, I've got another spade if you want.
But I won't trade them in either. I don't know what it is. I mean, especially games that someone bought as well. If someone bought you a game where you got it for a present or whatever, you don't want to trade that. At the same time, I'm going to put this to you. I've also got a couple of other points here that I thought up earlier on, which I thought were absolutely dynamite. One off, especially just now, because at the museum in Edinburgh, there's currently a games exhibition, which you've been to, you know.
If you're listening to this between January and April 20th, 2015, and you're in and around Edinburgh, go to this exhibition. It's called Games Game Masters at the Edinburgh Museum. It's a tenner to get in, but it's got loads of arcades and old stuff like that. It's awesome.
Yes. However, right, so it's all about arcades, it's all about retro, it's all about games that you've played in the past, right? Imagine you hadn't traded in any of your games, and then 20 years' time, when people are like, oh, like when your kids are that, or like people, young folk now, are like, oh, remember when we used to play like Red Dead Redemption on the Xbox 360? Oh, wish I could have that. I've still got it, because I didn't trade it in for £3 for that guy for game, who then opens it up and goes, oh, there's a little bit of a mark on that manual, gotta take a tenner off that, son, you'd actually due me £7. I mean, no, fuck off.
That's why I don't go game to trade my stuff in, to be honest. But no, it's an absolutely a fair enough point, and I'd back you up on that one. I wish I've still got a few of my old NES games, and I've still got a few of my old Mega Drive games, and I wish I still had all of them. Imagine you'd gone out when you were a wee youngster, or if you were old enough to buy games for yourself at that time, and you thought to yourself, Battletoads was a class game. I tell you what I'll do. I'll buy 20 copies. If you'd had the foresight to do that, and you got flash forward to like 2015 to see that it's so rare, or it's so expensive on eBay now.
It's currently £30 on Amazon.
You could make yourself a mint.
You could.
Yeah, and you'd only need one copy.
Aye. No, you would that. You don't need one copy. And aye, that's true. That's what I'm saying. Don't throw them away. Keep them. Imagine I have a copy of Battletoads, which I don't have, which you will get, though.
We will get that. I wish I had one.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you keep it all. But also, there's games like you're saying again, which again I've also got written down because I'm on fire now, is... keeping games, because games value can also go up. It's like a rare comic book or a rare, not a rare film, but like you get the nowadays you get like collector's editions and limited editions and whatever. But if you have like an old game, like apparently the ET game, remember the ET game was on like Atari, it was terrible.
That was awful, yeah.
Yeah, but it's so solid to get now, it's so rare because they all got like chucked out.
Well they got put in a landfill.
Yeah, in China. Yeah. Apparently I thought it was a myth.
No, it actually happened.
I watched that video game movie thing and I told it. I was like, this is mental.
Yeah.
But if you have that, then boom. Like, you've got that shit game. You said, shit games, trade them in.
Well, absolutely. Fair enough then.
Make some money and buy some new games.
Fair enough.
I've got it all figured out. This is actually going a lot better than what I thought. I was going to get ripped a new one, but
Well, the point there, the shit games that I feel I've traded in are ones that are mass produced. They're not going to be ones that are so...
But you get none for them.
Aye, but I mean, if you trade in six games and want 40 quid off another one, then for me, if I've got six games that I don't have that much emotional attachment to, or I thought were shit, or I thought I'm never going to play again, one of those three, then I'll just say, fuck it, I might as well just trade them in because I'm never going to play them again. Some of that, if I'm not that bothered about doing it, if there are some games that I don't think I'll ever play again, like Portal 2, great game, but I don't want to get rid of it because I had such a good experience playing it. I don't feel I can get rid of it. But a game like, say, Dishonored, I enjoyed Dishonored, I really did, but I'm not going to go back and play it again. And I didn't gain that much of an attachment to it. So I just thought to myself, nah, screw it, I'll just...
Dishonored's a funny one, man, because I've kind of put myself in a corner with that, because when Dishonored came out, I ended up pre-ordering it, and I got like the limited edition, whatever it is.
What, the limited edition, which...
I've got like a limited edition characters thing, and basically what it means is now I can't trade it in, because if I... Because I've got all like the cards and that, and now I can't trade. So I can't even trade it. So now I'm kind of.
Well, have you not got the? Have you not got just like the game with the sleeve?
Does yeah, it I have, nice? But I don't want to fucking trade that in and keep the shite there.
Well, that's up to you.
No, I'm not trading. So, in conclusion to this week's topic. Well, let us know what you think.
Yeah, absolutely. Let us know what you think. I mean, there'll be people that agree with all points we've made. There's people that disagree with every single point we made. But
even if you just want to write in and say, a couple of fannies.
Then please do. At least we'll know you've listened and wasted your time.
So who's the real winner here? Me? We agree with that?
No.
Nah, no. Okay, we'll go out on a neutral kind of... There's arguments for both.
Yeah, there is arguments for both. And it's something that we'd like to hear more about from all of you beautiful people that have taken your time to listen to us rambling shite to this point. We do have one more feature that we're going to go on to.
So let's wrap this one up and fucking move on. Ding that bell.
Yes!
Okay, right, so the last feature, and what it is it's our weekly debate. Now, what we'll be doing is we'll be taking a subject each week. This week, it's again game orientated, but it is DLC. Good or bad. Now, how we're going to decide this is we're going to basically flick a coin, and someone will be arguing for good, someone will be arguing for bad. So, Richard, do the honours, please.
Do you want to call it heads or tails? Right, heads. Heads is yes, tails is no. Whatever you get.
Right.
Right.
Oh,
it's tails. Gosh.
Right. Okay. So I'll be arguing that DLC is a good thing. You disclaimer here. I'm not a huge fan of DLC, but for this feature, I shall argue its cause. Right, so I'll start. Just cleansing the palate there, sorry.
Well, why? Right, okay. Uh-huh.
Okay.
So tell me, why is DLC a good thing?
DLC is a great thing because what it does is it allows developers to get games out on release days.
If they're broken?
Yes. No, yes.
Unfinished?
Yes.
I'll start
a wee story, right? I remember when I was on PlayStation 2, I was looking forward to Commandos 2 Behind Enemy Lines, right?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I know.
What was the name again? So people can YouTube it.
Commandos 2. It's a very well-known game.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It was coming out September, I think it was like September the 20th. It was like 6 days before my birthday. I was well excited. Went in a game, delayed. I was like, all right, okay, October. Went in the October, delayed. November, delayed. January, December, delayed. January. It got delayed for about a year. Honestly, God, this game got delayed, and I was so sick of waiting for it. If that had happened nowadays, right? September, just went in, boom, would have been it. Might not have been finished, might not have been perfect, might have a few bugs, but what it does is lets people get their content out, you can then play it, you can then experience it, and then they can fix it.
Right, okay, is that not like the same though as going to B&Q, other department stores available? Going to B&Q, buying a ladder and about four rungs being missing, and then going, aye, we'll deliver the email later date. It's fine, just use it now, you'll be fine.
No, because it's not a ladder.
Fair point.
Yeah, well, it is and it isn't. I suppose it's basically just, but it's also not, it's not always, but games aren't always broken though, that's the thing. Like, some DLC comes out at the beginning to improve a game or to make a game more expansive. I mean, like, for example, there are like some games that aren't really liked. Like, I know you really liked Last of Us. DLC came out for that, you were all over it.
I was.
So you basically it increases your enjoyment of a game sometimes because it gives you more content and it makes
adds
the end
story.
Yes, exactly. So for that reason, DLC is one of the greatest things that's ever come into gaming.
Allow me to argue that point.
Please do.
From my perspective, I think DLC now is making gamers and making gaming in general a bit lazy. Like, if you start playing, if you start playing a game and you decide to yourself, no, I'm not good enough at this, you can just go and physically buy with your own money, like a gun or a car or a skin that'll improve it and make the game easier for you. And with the both of us growing up, like when there's been a NES and when a Super Nintendo and stuff, if you're not good enough, you're not fucking good enough. Try harder, and you practice more and more, and you get better, and it improves the experience of a game.
I'm going to intervene here.
Intervene,
is that the right word?
That's the one. Eh?
Aye, that's what I said.
Intervene.
Did I say that? I'm going to interrupt you. I agree with that. However, that I think is different. That's microtransactions. That's people getting ahead of the game just through money. That's like when you play FIFA and someone comes along and just buys a team rather than saving up coins and being good at the game. They just buy a team. I disagree with that. People go online and just,
man, you're meant to be
buy. No, I don't necessarily think that's DLC. That's microtransactions. That doesn't add anything to the game. That just,
that's an in-game transaction.
Yeah, but it's not a DLC. It's not additional content. It's basically sort of, it speeds things up for you. It speeds up the process rather than grinding out and wasting your time. Basically, what that is that's every game for the iPad or the iPhone. When you download it, you're like, oh yeah, welcome there. Got to build a farm. Yeah, what a company harvester. Yeah, it's $150. Like, well, fuck off.
If they're freeware, then yeah, microtransaction. That's fine. But as we all know, free to play games are a little bit shite. They're immensely popular though. To be honest with you, yeah, fair enough. In-game transactions like that, I can see the point in them. I don't necessarily like them.
I love
games,
them.
I know you do, for the purposes of this.
Yeah,
but for games like FIFA, when people come along and buy a team, so if you're playing Ultimate Team, the point of Ultimate Team is to play with your team, and the more you play with your team, the more small rewards you get at like incremental stages, so you can gradually just grow a better team. But with the thing with an in-game transaction like that is people can't be bothered waiting, so they'll set up these things where you can just buy coins and you just buy success.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as we all know, in football mirrored in real life,
well,
is
exactly
super fucking annoying. It's nice to watch, but fuck me, it's annoying.
One thing I will say for that, which I'm bound to do because I have to,
mm-hmm,
is when someone comes along with a team that's like, when you see their team and you're like, oh my god, that is an unbelievable team, and the majority of folk who go out and buy teams are pish at the game. So you get the satisfaction of beating them with your wee crappy team, and I think that's better. Not only have they spent like 11 or 15 quid in their team, they're not even beating you. You're wee good. Perfect. So that proves, well, VLC is good.
You just drop a wee C-ball. No, that was nope. We'll ignore that. We'll ignore that. Sorry, that's.
If we had a swear jar.
If we had a swear jar, we'd be broke. We would be broke. To touch on another point, I think that it's kind of. I'm getting really annoyed. To touch on another point, I kind of think that's setting a bit of a bad example. Kids now that are coming along to play games, where if you start to play a game and you're not good, like you're not good like that. That was a click of my fingers.
Right.
If you're not good at the game, as soon as you start playing it, people just, like, kids now seem to get annoyed, and you can therefore just buy success. And that's not what it's about. Like, us coming from the generation where you really, really had to try and get frustrated and try levels on like Mario and Sonic over and over and over and over again, and the immense amount of satisfaction that gave you. As we touched on earlier, you can't buy a memory
apparently you can.
Well, no, you can't now though. That's the point of this, because you can buy a memory and you can try it once and say, this is too fucking hard, and then you'll buy something that'll help you going along, or some sort of some DLC that might help you, and that'll be you done, and you'll have got nothing out of it, because all you've done is essentially seen a wall, You can't climb over it. You buy a ladder, that's you over it.
This ladder's got four bits missing though from B&Q.
Well, no, this is the bit that's got all of the bits included. So it makes it just so much easier, and there's no satisfaction to it for me.
See, I disagree with that because I have to and say that kids buying stuff, I'm all for kids spunking away their parents' money. Love it. No reason behind it. I have to disagree.
Right, fair enough. Another thing that really annoys me about it is that I'll take Borderlands for instance.
Yeah.
If you look at Borderlands and you think to yourself, why? Cool, that's got so much content in it. This is brilliant. I'm really enjoying this. And then you find out that the game that you're really enjoying at the same time has actually got DLC that you have to buy online to get more of that experience. Why not just give us that experience in the first place?
Ah, right. I had this argument at work. And I was saying because it's not ready yet. Like, they might imagine you made Sonic the Hedgehog, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got 10 levels, for example, right? And then you finish 10 levels and someone's like, oh, there's an extra 5 levels. You're like, give me those 5 levels at the beginning. Maybe they weren't ready. Maybe they were still making those 5 levels. This is what I'm saying. Like, if you wanted all those 15 levels, just like going back to Commandos again, which I'm still bitterly disappointed the fact I've waited a year for. I had to wait for it to be finished. It took an extra year. They could just put it out there, boom, and then take that year when I'm still enjoying it and put extra content in. Everyone's a winner.
I prefer,
and that's why I think DLC is great.
Okay. I would prefer to buy a product that works as soon as you get it though. So that's
Assassin's Creed Unity. We're looking at you.
We're looking at me, the correct person. And another point that I think is making a bad thing is, in a way, it's starting to make the idea of getting a high score and beating something extinct. It's starting to make that relevant. And the point that I'm trying to breach here is, you remember back in the day, if you were presented with a challenge, i.e. maybe say a Tony Hawk's or something like that, and you had to beat a certain amount of points to get Spider-Man. And we all know Spider-Man was super cool to play with. And he had the wee web-slinging thing, and he did the kickflip or whatever it was, and web-slinged his skateboard. That's great. But what you had to do was earn it.
That was DLC.
No. What you had to do was earn it. You had to earn it. And for me, the moment that I unlocked Spider-Man after trying so hard, it was immense. Like putting on the moon physics cheat, which was pretty funny. It was fucking awesome. Yeah, but putting on the moon physics cheat and just doing that thing over and over and over and again, his special move, and getting just millions and millions of points. The satisfaction that you got out of that was immense. Even if you didn't put the moon physics on you and you pulled off his special move and or all of his little trademark moves, that's great. But what you had to do was earn it.
Yeah, that's true.
Rather than just throw cash at the developers and reward them for not finishing a game, not bothering, like rushing themselves into buying a game so that they can just get people to come along and spunk more money away on something that should already have all that content in it.
I get it.
There's a lot of room for improvement with DLC. I'll give it that. And if we can probably both come on to this point here, costumes, stuff like that. I don't have a problem with those DLC wise. To be honest with you,
I do if you're paying for it, because you're paying for fuck all essentially. I must be arguing for it. I mean, it's great. I love paying for costumes.
No, like what I'm saying here, we can both get under these points because these are room for improvement on both sides. Costumes like Little Big Planet 3 that I was talking about earlier on, I didn't mind paying for a couple of little costumes because I got a PSN voucher for Christmas, so I had a little bit saved over.
The whole argument's coming down around you.
It's not though. What I'm saying is, I didn't mind paying for a little Kratos costume and a little Buzz Lightyear costume because I had like £2 left, and that's fine. So I get to play as those two, but they didn't add anything to the game.
No.
I don't see why I couldn't have just unlocked them. But fair enough, they were pennies. But that's the problem with it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
It's reeling you in.
Most of it, I can't.
It's like the price of a pint or something. Well, it's the price of a pint. You could buy like two little costumes for a Little Big Planet. And
yeah, well, you can argue with that. A pint's gone after a few mouthfuls, whereas these costumes will last forever, and you can't put a price on memory.
Fair enough. The skins that you can get where like you would, where you would improve the game, you would improve your character's abilities or something like that. I'm not up for them. I don't really like them. Like Guacamelee is another amazing platformer. There's, you get options to buy like skins that'll increase damage and stuff like that. Why make someone pay for that? Just make them go through a huge big challenge and reward them for it.
I disagree with people giving DLC that gives you an advantage.
Yeah,
that's horseshit.
Basically DLC for the most part is blatant money grabbing. Why not just try to be skilled enough to unlock something really good anyway? Why not just try and keep going and just keep on persevering and trying to earn something? You know, for one of the most lucrative areas of the entertainment industry and all, why not just start to give back a little for all of these people that have bought into it so much? We pay for a fucking game that you give us half finished, and then you charge more for arenas, skins, and levels. DLC, fuck you, DLC, fuck you.
Is that your closing argument? Nah, I agree with all.
A successful start to this feature.
DLC.
Right. So that's a wee thing on DLC. Basically, we're going to do that every week with something else. So we're going to flip a coin. One of us has to argue for, one of us has to argue against. That was DLC, and I think we can quite confidently say both of us.
Fuck DLC.
Fuck DLC. So that's it for our first wee podcast here. How do you think it's went, Greg?
It's not been too bad. It's not been a complete disaster. There was no fires.
There's no fire. Died. Yeah. Well, I mean, you can only brand that as a success if no one died and there wasn't any fires. So
that's my motto on life.
For a podcast. we hope that you guys have all enjoyed listening to this as well. We really appreciate you taking the time to.
If you have enjoyed listening to it, quite a question your life.
Don't say that. That's what I mean.
No, because we do that to make dying, and that fucking makes a failure.
Oh yeah.
Shit.
Anyway, so if you have enjoyed it, tell your friends. Listen to it again. Listen to it on repeat to help you get to sleep. You know, you might only need the first minute or so, first 30 seconds. That'll do you.
Probably.
Yeah, fucking considering some of the shit we've said.
So how can they contact us, Richard?
Well, there are varying methods.
Smoke signal.
If you contact with a smoke signal, I will be very impressed, and you can have our podcast. You can contact us directly on a Gmail, which is thedesertwhales@gmail.com. We've got a wee Twitter as well, so it's just @thedesertwhales, and an Instagram too, where you can check out all of our square pictures @thedesertwhales. And the desert, remember, DESERT. Otherwise, it'd be the Desert Whales.
Yeah, I know.
Like chocolate cake name. And stuff. The Desert Whales.
Maybe not. Nah.
Nah, actually. Well, we've nailed our colour to the mast now, so.
Okay, I take two.
Shit.
Shit. Well, if that's all.
Then that's all.
Time to say cheerio and bye bye.
Cheerio.
And bye bye. Oh, shit.